Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Stay connected, 929 ESPN.
In the wake of the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, we're being asked to stay home in an attempt to stop the spread of the virus. So radio.com is giving you an opportunity to stay connected with our live daily online broadcast called I'm Listening, Stay Connected. I'm Dr. Chris Donahue. I'll be joined by celebrities and experts in the field of mental health to give you facts and tools to support and guide you. Watch I'm Listening, Stay Connected every day at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Stay connected with radio.com.
Sports seasons may be on hold right now, but team front offices are busy. And radio.com has the biggest sports stations in the country, covering your favorite teams and sports. Stay up on the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NHL, NBA, and more. All the trades, player and coach interviews, and everything you need to know. Binge your favorite podcast from the top personalities in sports. Stay connected to the teams and sports you love, so you're ready when they come back. Listen on radio.com or the radio.com app.
Augers, trenchers, blades, brooms, shredders, mulchers, hammers, compactors, planers, rollers, rakes. That's just a sample of the more than 100 attachments John Deere offers for skid steer and compact track loaders. The added versatility provided will help you win more jobs. And with the universal self-cleaning quick-tach system, you can switch from one type of attachment to another in no time flat. Your John Deere dealer can help you choose the right attachments to help you run your world. Visit johndeere.com/compactattachments to learn more.
At Advance Auto Parts, we want to make sure your vehicle is ready to roll when you are. We have the right oil and filters at the right price every day, from brands like Pennzoil, Mobil 1, Valvoline, and Castrol. And if you make a qualifying Pennzoil purchase this month, you'll get Gum Out Regain Fuel Injector Cleaner for free. Also, visit AdvanceAutoParts.com and tell us about a hero in your community. You could each win $1,000. Advance your auto at Advance Auto Parts and participate in CarQuest locations.
I have wonderful news, Memphis. Oak Hall is open again. Now, that's wonderful news because Oak Hall is a part of Memphis. And if Oak Hall is back, that means we're starting to make our way back, too. But beyond that, there's a lot of things we have to get, you know? It's graduation season. And if your graduates can't have actual graduation ceremonies, they can still have memorable gifts. There are birthdays and anniversaries to celebrate. Father's Day will be here before you know it. Or maybe you just want to thank the person you've been quarantined with all this time. There's no better way to do that than with a gift from Oak Hall. And yes, of course, they are cleaning and disinfecting and being as careful as you'd expect them to be. This is a store that made 4,000 masks to benefit church health during their time away. They're certainly going to take care of you. So stop by, if only just to say hello or to pick up something for someone you love. It's a joy just to be able to do that once again. And the folks at Oak Hall would love to see their friends. Until she went to Triumph Bank the other day, Naya had never set foot in a bank. Naya just graduated from Freedom Prep. She's been a big part of the inner city rugby program. Naya started making a little money from her job at Girls Inc., but she didn't even have a checking account. And that's where Triumph Bank stepped in to help. They set Naya up with a checking account and her very first debit card. They showed Naya how easy it is to do their online banking with their mobile app. Not only that, the folks at Triumph decided to work with Inner City Rugby to teach more young people like Naya about financial literacy so they can feel more confident and can start to build brighter financial futures for themselves. Naya is the first of dozens in the program who will benefit from Triumph's personal touch. You can benefit too, of course. Triumph offers that same personal touch to everyone who steps through their doors. So go to their website at triumphbank.com. They're invested in the community and in making banking easy for you.
This is WMFS-FM and HD1 Bartlett, WMFS Memphis. 92.9 FM ESPN is Memphis and the Mid-South station you can count on. Live on the radio.com free app. Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington thing.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and beyond. Every weekday around 10 a.m. Brought to you by the attorneys of Thomas White and Gill. Find them online at memphisfamilylaw.com.
I am following the river down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War. I'm from Graceland.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That was Graceland by Paul Simon. Going to Graceland is something I'm going to do later this morning. It reopens today for tours.
Oh, and you were going. Are you having a pre-tour? Are you going as a regular old civilian?
No, I'm just going to buy a ticket and go, incognito, behind the mat with a mask and everything.
I see. What have you heard about how they are doing it? I read a piece, whatever, that they're opening because the people demand it and they're going to lose money, and even though because it's reduced capacity. Are you sure we can get a ticket?
I've already bought a ticket.
What's it cost to go to Graceland these days?
It's not cheap. If you do like the basic tour that gets you the house and the museums and the planes and everything, it's $70.
Yeah, that's not cheap. When did you last go to Graceland?
I think the last time I went to Graceland, we were at the CA, I say we, you weren't involved in this, multiple people, we did a magazine, an Elvis special magazine, and I did a sort of an essay about Graceland for that magazine, and that's probably the last time I went, which was several years ago at this point.
I loved that piece. What did you call Graceland? Memphis's live, what was the conceit?
I had sort of multiple conceits. I had different. It was sort of like five ways of looking at Graceland or whatever. Yeah. That's not what it was called, but it was more that kind of approach.
It was really lovely. Is it out there somewhere? If people wanted to read it,
I'll shoot a link out on Twitter later.
Okay. Really, it was a lovely piece, and that's the last time you went. Do you tend to ever have people who come in town and want to go to Graceland, or you go to Graceland with them, or?
I've done that several times over the years. It's become much less common than it used to be. Soon after we moved back to Memphis, college friends come visit and you can go to Graceland. And now, A, college friends have been to Graceland, and B, they have kids and stuff, and it's not as much of a thing.
And is your understanding that, the worry about all of this from the business perspective is, okay, Elvis was of a certain time. And people loved Elvis, and they would make the pilgrimage to Graceland, and then they would get old, and then they would die, and then the business would dry up. Do you gather that Graceland is every year as popular as the year before?
I think they rely more, in terms of younger people, more on international travel, which I think is going to be a big problem right now and for the near future. I think you'll find more younger people interested in Elvis and Graceland in Europe and Japan than you will in the United States. They've also been trying to just diversify what they do and make it less of a specifically Elvis brand than sort of a pop culture kind of brand. And so they have their soundstage where they do concerts and country artists and 80s rock artists and all, it's almost like the new sort of changed what the casinos used to be in terms of those level shows. They've been bringing in various conventions. They did a General Hospital convention, which is another thing that I would think is an aging audience. And they had scheduled a Twin Peaks convention, of all things. I'm not sure if that may have been disrupted by the virus, and their museum stuff has sort of been doing more to situate Elvis within a broader context. Like they did one exhibit when I was here a few years ago that was about, you know, just rock wardrobes. It was like, you know, Justin Timberlake suit and like Kiss's costumes, and it wasn't just Elvis, right?
Right.
So I think they've been trying to broaden the appeal and make it more of a Elvis as a linchpin for sort of pop culture.
Well, and then they did the movies. What was it? Christmas at Graceland? Is that what it was? And then a bunch
of... Exactly. So that's another example of trying to branch out and pull people in other ways and make Graceland the idea as sort of a place.
What can there be after Graceland? After Christmas at Graceland, though, what can you possibly? Didn't they do a series of Christmas? There's been a bunch of those.
Like Christmas at Graceland 2, and there's Wedding at Graceland, and like, you know, we'll probably have Halloween at Graceland at some point.
All right, so you're headed to Graceland. Chris is now as things reopen. You didn't do the donut shop. Have you been to Gibson's? Have you had? I texted Don, by the way, this morning to ask. You wonder how long the lines last. I texted him. I said, are things still crazy there? And he said, it's a record every day at Gibson's. Every day is a record, I guess, for that day. So
I have not been to Gibson's or any other donut shop. No donut shops for me quite yet. And so, no, my personal movement has been somewhat restricted. And I did have lunch yesterday. I tagged along with Jennifer Biggs as she went to the cupboard for the first day
it
reopened.
You sat down at the cupboard?
I did. That was my second meal in a restaurant. Both of my meals in restaurants have been work-related, and that was my second at the cupboard with Jennifer. It's the first time I've had a meal with another person at a restaurant.
And how was it?
It was okay. I'm not sure. I haven't read her thing yet, so I'm not sure what she wrote. But there was a lot of inconsistency on mask usage. All the employees had masks, but a lot of them had to tuck below their nose, which is not
supposed to do. Yeah.
Right. We felt like in terms of customers coming in, it was about 50-50 in terms of people coming in with masks, maybe even a little bit better than that. And once you sit down to eat, we've discussed, like you can't wear a mask and eat. So.
Right. Right. What's your order at the cupboard?
I got a country fried steak with mashed potatoes, black-eyed peas, and fried green tomatoes.
I have to say, country fried steak is one of the things that when I moved to the South...
That's a damn strong order.
The country fried steak is really delicious. It is really good.
I love country fried steak. It's one of those things that, like, I've never cooked. Like, I cook lots of stuff, but I didn't cook Southern stuff. I've never, like, cooked country fried steak. So that's the kind of thing, like, I'm not eating... Unless I go to a place like the cupboard that has country fried steak, and if I do and it's on the menu, it's sort of hard for me not to order it.
What is country fried steak? Is just breaded steak with gravy? Is that what it is?
Like a round steak or something.
Filet mignon.
It's more ground beef, I think.
And so breaded, sort of like a fried chicken kind of breading, and
it's really good.
Fried and. Covered either with brown gravy or white gravy. I actually prefer white gravy on my country fried steak, but they did it with brown gravy at the cupboard.
Do you have a place in Memphis where is your go-to for country, where you would get...
Well, the place I would get it most frequently years ago was the arcade. When I worked for the Memphis Flyer, we were walking... The arcade was the closest restaurant to our office, and so I would eat at the arcade pretty frequently for lunch. And country fried steak was pretty much always on the menu. So that I'm not saying that's the best country fried steak in Memphis, but that's certainly the place I would eat it most frequently.
Right. Okay, a couple things we have to get to today. One is the Riverfront design was unveiled last night. You have not written about it. Are you going to write about it?
Probably, maybe. I mean, they didn't get down to the presentation until after 5 last night. I'm going to Graceland this morning, and so I've gotten kind of squeezed on it. So I might try to circle around to it before the week's over.
Okay. What are your initial thoughts? Have you seen it, or have you have a take?
I watched the presentation that we hosted on our site. And obviously read Wayne Richard's story, and I've looked at what they put up online. I generally positive feelings about it. I mean, there are plenty of, questions, and obviously execution is what matters, or matters beyond the presentation. But what I was struck by more than anything was, they do here's what it looks like now, and then here's the rendering of what it'll look like in the future, right?
Right.
And the rendering should sort of knock you out because they're renderings, and if they don't, like, you got a problem, right?
Right.
And so who knows if the reality is going to match the rendering. But it was the before. They did a photo of here's what this part of this portion of Tomley Park looks like now, and then, you know, clip, here's what it'll look like when we do this. And the before is just a field. It's just one, just there's nothing there. It's just a field. And it sort of struck me all over again that it is almost entirely a blank slate. And there are some people who think that's fine, and that's the way it should be. I think it's sort of a wasted opportunity to literally just have a big field there and nothing else.
It's a field on the other side of a road.
Yes, on the other side of a road, below a big bluff that does not have easy access. It just has these relatively steep, like, staircases going down. And so that's really, to me, for all the, like, fighting over the park itself, because that's what matters right. relative to Memphis in May, the access issues and the flow into the park and the connecting the park more to the city is almost more important than what they do with the big space itself.
Easily the biggest part. Like, it's to me, like, what's the name of the thing that you said was a boondoggle that didn't work for landing? What's it called?
Bill Street Landing. I mean, Bill Street Landing works for its basic function of, like,
serving
in the riverboats.
Right.
But as a public, you know, the restaurant and the shop and all
did
that.
Did not work.
Was
but fundamentally, it didn't work because it's, I mean, it could have been the greatest thing ever. I don't think it would have worked because I don't know how to get there. I literally don't know how to, like, it. It is totally cut off from the city. And then you've got sort of Mud Island with this monorail. It's kind of fun the first time you take it, but it's not really a great way to get anywhere. And then you've got the pyramid, which is basically walled off from the city. And it's just,
well, I mean, part of this is infrastructure, the way things are designed. And part of this is mentality of the city, which I think has been shifting and really needs to shift more. At least, I think Memphis still has a mentality of when you go to a place, you drive up and park in front of it. And that is not the way downtown cities work. Downtowns of cities work. It's
right.
just not. And so people have, hey, we need to make it easier and more, not only easier, but more sort of enjoyable to, like, make your way from the city to the park and back. But people have to get used to, like, if you're driving or however you're getting to downtown, if you're not already there, like, you probably park it on the street downtown or in a parking garage or, like, wherever you park when you're in cities and you're walking to the park. That's just the way. Drive into and park at urban parks.
That's clearly right. But if I don't even know, and I'm not the most, I'm directionally impaired. I'm lucky I get anywhere. But I don't know right now if I just wanted to go to Tomley Park, where I go and park and walk there. Like, I don't know the way. There has to be a way because you are crossing a giant street. Let me ask you this, though. For the folks who haven't seen them, how would you just generally describe what they are about doing on Tomley Park?
So if you think of the way Bill Street Music Fest is, I mean, if you look at Tomley Park when it's just, you know, 11 months of the year, it's just a big field, right, for the most part. If you think about Bill Street Music Festival, and you think about the way that's organized, it's organized into three stages and a tent, right, for the blues tent.
Right.
And as much as there's been this fight about Memphis in May versus the Tomley Park redesign, the Tomley Park redesign has been essentially designed around the footprint of the Bill Street Music Festival. It creates separately the three big fields that will be for those three stages. And it creates this sort of covered pavilion that I think they'll have basketball there. They'll have, like, roller skate parties, which they've been doing. They'll have all kinds of events. But they'll also have, like, the blues tent. and so the basic footprint of it recreates that general structure, not only of, but for, frankly, Music Fest. But in between, in the transitions between those big fields, they're putting in, like, more specific sort of active kind of stuff. And so whether that's, you know, more forested areas or picnic-y areas or playground areas or, like, you know, walk. Other kinds of things that are sort of bracket between the fields. I think the two most dramatic sort of things they're proposing, one is this the sort of covered pavilion for various activities in the middle of the park, which I would guess would be where, like, the barbecue contest judging would happen as well. And then at the south end, which is where, as you start moving towards the Big River Crossing Harahan Bridge, Right now, there's sort of one staircase or whatever, or a walkway that goes straight down from the elevated Ashburn Hoppick Park down to Tomley Park. And they're proposing sort of a walkway that will wind its way sort of through the trees and through the vegetation at that end.
I see. Is there that they? What's the? There's a beach. They talk about a beach.
Yeah, that was mentioned in Wayne Risch's story. That was not mentioned in the presentation with the designers, and I have not personally been able to clarify that. What I suspect that means is, like, you know, a place for, like, beach volleyball and that kind of stuff. I don't think it means like a beach, like you know, no one's going to go swimming in the Mississippi River, right? And so I assume that is what that means. But that was not mentioned in the presentation, so I don't know whether that's still something they're doing or it's not really a focus. I suspect that seems like a minor element or maybe an element that may or may not end up there. So I don't know.
And how is it connecting to the broader city?
Well, they're going to redesign the pathways that are currently there, which are now these sort of steep staircases down the bluff. And I think they called it a cutback bluff. And so it's going to be, they're going to build like a more of a gradual sort of way down there and sort of redesign that whole thing. Like I mentioned, the walkway at the southern end from that will connect to Big River Crossing. And then I'm not sure really on the that's the southern, on the northern end, which is sort of how they're going to connect it more, integrate it with Bill Street Landing.
Right.
But they're also going to, they're keeping Riverside Drive four lanes, but they're going to do all kinds of like traffic slowing and you know, that kind of stuff to slow down traffic.
Right. People can read Wayne Risch's piece about it at the Daily Memphian. It has all sorts of details, and I'll be interested. The timing of it, by the way, is, as Chris mentioned yesterday, the Music Fest will be able to, Memphis in May will be able to be held there this, a year from now, but in 2022, it will have to temporarily relocate for while this is being constructed. All right, the other stuff that is happening is, I guess there's some NBA news, right? I mean,
We're sort of creeping along, and so I think we're going to be taking baby steps from here until we get there, basically.
Right, and the baby steps. Let's see. There was the idea that they are probably zeroing in on Orlando as a place to do this, and that that they are preparing a plan to bring back players from wherever they have been, if teams want to bring back players. But there's no sense of practice starting up, certainly, or any date for go or how it will work yet. That will not happen. By the time we reconvene, we may have more. And then finally, more Memphis, more Grizzlies Rewind. They're doing more of the greatest games. They're this weekend, Chris?
Yeah, it's going to be the next three weekends. It's not going to be Tony Allen and Chris Vernon on new commentary anymore. It's going to be the original game audio, and then Pete Pranica is going to probably already has done new introductions for the games.
And what do we have this weekend?
Yeah, so it's six more games. This weekend it's going to be, and each weekend it's two games from the same series. So this weekend it's two more games from that 2011 series against the Thunder. It's game three, which was the Grizzlies won in overtime. That was what I called the Norma Rae moment game. That's the game where people first held up the towels in defiance instead of waving them. And then it's going to be game six, which Zach Randolph scored 30 to force the game seven in OKC. And then next weekend, it's going to be two games from the 2015 series against Portland, including the game where Mike Conley got his face broke. And then the third weekend, which will, 2 weeks from now, I guess, will be two games from the 2017 series against the Spurs, including the great overtime game where Marcus all hit the game winner.
All right, Chris, thanks very much. Say hello to Elvis for us. We are off tomorrow, so you are liberated. And Monday, we will talk to you again on Tuesday. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks.
That is Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. When we come back, Jack McCallum is going to join us. Longtime writer for Sports Illustrated. He'll talk to us about Michael Jordan and more. It's Jeff Calkins, 92.9 FM ESPN.
It's 92.9's Mid-South Senior Athlete Salute, honoring local Mid-South senior athletes during the month of May who won't be finishing their seasons on campus. If you are a senior or have a senior son or daughter whose season was cut short due to COVID, let us know. Go to 92.9ESPN.com and click on the Senior Athlete Salute. We'll give special shout-outs live weekdays in May, and we'll feature seniors on air, online, and through 92.9's social channels. It's the 92.9 FM ESPN Mid-South Senior Athlete Salute.
Maybe you've resolved to have more fun this year. Maybe you've resolved to eat better food. Maybe you've resolved to try new things. Maybe you've resolved to be present and really enjoy your life. Well, I have the answer for any of those resolutions, and it is Bounty on Broad. Bounty on Broad is delicious, locally sourced food served in generous family helpings in a restaurant that is so beautiful it makes you happy to be alive. If you've been, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you haven't been, it's time to change that. Go and get the crisp Brussels or the pan-seared scallops or the braised pork shank or honestly, anything they serve. My own particular challenge at Bounty is that I love some dishes so much, like the fried oysters, for example, that it's hard for me not to get them every single time. So I hereby resolve to get something new next time I go, and you should resolve to get yourself to Bounty on Broad before any more of this year slips by. Bounty on Broad is located at 2519 Broad Avenue. For reservations, call 901-410-8131 or go to bountyonbroad.com.
This is an important message about coronavirus. You are at higher risk for getting seriously ill if you are over 65, if you have any serious underlying medical conditions like heart disease, chronic lung disease like asthma, diabetes, or if you are undergoing cancer treatment. Stay home. Avoid close contact with others. Wash your hands frequently with soap and water for 20 seconds. Disinfect frequently touched objects like doorknobs and light switches. Visit coronavirus.gov for the latest information from the CDC. For more, go to radio.com/stayconnected.
Doctor's log, Hell Date 2020. Right now, health and medical industries are feeling the pressure of the COVID-19 outbreak. Doctors are feeling that pressure. Nurses are feeling that pressure. I'm definitely feeling that pressure. And so I wanted to capture some of this journey. It's a log of this scary adventure we're all on together. I'm Esther Chu, MD, and this is my doctor's log. Go subscribe on radio.com and wherever you get your podcasts.
Between pollen, pollution, and all the other nasty stuff in the air these days, isn't it time to make good nasal hygiene your new normal? Think about it. You wouldn't go a day without washing your hands or brushing your teeth, but what about your nose, the body's air filter? Cleaning your nose with nasal irrigation is clinically proven to relieve congestion caused by allergies and colds and flu without drugs. I'm Martin Hoke, and I invented Navage, the world's only nasal irrigator with powered suction. Navage is the easy-to-use alternative to neti pots, pills, and prescriptions. Navage cleans your nose naturally by flushing out allergens, mucus, bacteria, and worse. Here's my promise to you. Try Navage. If it doesn't relieve congestion and help you breathe better and feel healthier, just return it for a full, no-questions-asked refund. Over 1 million sold. Online at Navage.com or in stores at Walgreens, CVS, Rite Aid, and Target. Make good nasal hygiene your new normal with Navage. N-A-V-A-G-E.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
All right, back at the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Jack McCallum, longtime writer for Sports Illustrated. Also, host of a wildly successful new podcast, the Dream Team Tapes podcast. It is available now wherever you find your podcasts on Twitter at McCallum12. He joins me now. Jack, how are you?
I'm good. Nice lead into the show, by the way. Bright side of the road.
Yeah, isn't it good? Yeah, really good. That's one of my favorites.
One of mine too.
Tell me about the podcast first. Tell me about the podcast.
Well, by some miracle, I had preserved, I can't find yesterday's mail, but by some, you know, lucky quirk, I had saved my audio tapes from writing the Dream Team book, which was about 10 years ago. I don't know. It just seemed like something special, something I could save. And somebody was going to do a documentary on it a couple of years ago, and it kind of fell apart like many things in Hollywood do. But I had these tapes, and myself and my agent, who was suddenly created a podcast company, said this would be a good first one. So I kind of, you know, it just kind of came together very quickly. And I based the podcast, it's not me reading the book, nobody wants to hear that, but I kind of based the scripts upon the audio that I had from the players. And I kind of told the story, and, you know, it just turns out to be, this is just my opinion, but kind of powerful when you hear Bird's voice, you know, Magic's voice, Jordan's voice. So it just kind of came together, and I was lucky I had saved the tapes.
That these were, now, when you wrote a story for Sports Illustrated, typically, would you tape interviews for those, or did you just tape for the book?
You know, it's funny, when I teach college, I teach in college classes, I said I've worked at five different places, and it's very odd in journalism that one of the things that is not talked over, at least where I've worked, and it wasn't at Sports Illustrated, was whether you should tape or not.
Right.
You know, I mean, lawyers went over everything with a fine-tooth comb at SI, yet nobody ever said you had to tape something. And I guess in answer to your question, Jeff, as things got on, as I got older, which I am now, I needed to tape more and more because my ability to write things quickly kind of evaporated a little bit. If you're a newspaper deadline person and you're there after the game and you got to talk to, you know, Penny Hardaway or, you know, Gasol, you don't have enough time to tape.
And transcribe.
And,
yep.
You know, you got to just transcribe that and get back to your computer. Now, most people do tape these days because there's so many follow-ups. You know, there's Twitter and things like that. So the answer to the question is I tape most of the time. But for a book, you got to tape. Right. You got to tape everything. You got to sit there and tape every single thing.
And the interviews were all subsequent looking back at them, or were they were contemporaneous and looking back, or are these people reflecting on the Dream Team from years later?
They're mostly from 2009, 2010, 2011. I have a couple from the Barcelona Olympics, like Chuck Daly had died, the coach, when I started the book. But I had some audio from Chuck back with an interview I did back in Barcelona. But, you know, for clarity's sake, most of the time when I did these interviews, they're pretty clear because they're only from 10 years ago. And I had most of the guys, you know, in a kind of quiet place. There's a couple times when I even mentioned during the podcast, hey, you can't hear this very well because John Stockton and I are walking by the waterfall, but which is true. But my rationalization is you always got to have one of those, right? Well, it all adds authenticity. You know, it sounds.
Yeah, exactly.
And
well,
so that's my rationalization when you can't hear something very well.
I think it's fabulous. And one of the things, reasons that it's so interesting, again, you can listen to the Dream Tapes podcast wherever your local podcasts are found, but is that because we all just watched the Jordan stuff, to see these figures now, Larry Bird, Magic, Karl Malone, we just revisited with all of them, and they have a certain glow to them now. And to see some of the exchanges afterwards between Michael and Larry, or, you know, after when he was coach of the Pacers, to see the way
it does feel like
they are these larger than life characters, and you have them on tape. Did it feel like when you were covering them, like I cover the NBA now and they don't necessarily feel mythic. Now in retrospect, they feel mythic. Did it feel mythic when you were covering them?
Well, I'll tell you, Jeff, I started this in the 80s. I started covering them in the early 80s.
Right.
So the league, I don't know whether you know, quite old enough to remember, but, you know, the NBA wasn't what it was.
Right.
So you started covering, Magic and Larry were in the league. Michael came in at 84. But those of us that started covering it back then, even though we're all not very bright, there's one thing that we could kind of see, and that was that we were on this elevator, that you could see this league rising. And you could feel that you were part of it. We were still critical. Stern still got mad. We still had a couple tiffs with the guys. But it was a different time. It was a time that the press was still important. Fortunately for me, Sports Illustrated was. You know, Jordan loved his mug on the cover. And so to a greater extent than anything I ever covered, we kind of did understand, what was happening. We kind of did understand that this was different. And now, I had mentioned teaching earlier, I always ask my students, because it comes up in sports communication classes or whatever it's called, Jordan constantly comes up as a frame of reference. And I always ask them, why do you people still remember Jordan? I mean, I'm glad you do, because it's, for somebody like me, you know, it's made it easier to stay, you know, relevant. And the answer, I said, you have LeBron. You have Curry, you know, you have James Harden, who looks like he has a Plato beard. Why aren't these people as interesting as Jordan? And I always get some version of an answer. It's like he's an Arthurian legend. It's like he's some kind of guy that was talked about by my father or my mother or my grandmother, and they're still fully invested in that generation, and it's made it, as I said, extremely lucky that I happened to be there.
It's, of course, it wasn't just luck, Jack, but we'll skip over that. So you also happen to have, among the tapes that you have, these audio tapes, you happen to be the proud owner of a videotape of the greatest basketball game that has ever been played, and it is not one that was televised. I don't know how it is going to appear in what role it will take in your podcast, but if you can briefly tell the folks about the greatest game ever played and how you have the video.
Well, the title of the chapter in my book was The Greatest Game Nobody Ever Saw, because what happened was we were in the Dream Team went to Monte Carlo to train, you know, make your own joke here, right before they went to Barcelona. So they had played the French national team the day before, and I mean, I can't give chapter and verse of this, but they probably, half of them were hungover. They had played, they played craps or, blackjack all night in the casino, whatever it was. And the game was really crappy. So the next day at practice, they were ready to leave for Barcelona, I believe 3 or 4 days later. And Chuck Daly, the coach, said, we got to have something. We got to get our SHIT together here, boys. So he arranged this scrimmage, and there happened to be 10 of them there that day. Drexler wasn't there because his knee was hurting, and John Stockton was still nursing a broken leg that had happened. So he had 10 guys. He split them into teams, and he put Magic on one team as sort of the quote captain and Michael on the other team. And they started kind of going at each other. Magic's team got off to a lead, and Magic started talking. Started trash talking, and Michael started coming back, as we might call it, we might call it inexorably, Jordan's team came back and won the game. And, you couldn't watch practice. There were Olympic rules. We weren't watching practice.
Right.
So when we came in later for our daily, cattle call, you could tell something was different. Like Magic was PO'd. And Michael was singing the Gatorade song, I Want to Be Like Mike. And there was just this feeling, and Chuck Daly didn't talk about it. Well, we had a scrimmage, and there was a little friction. And some of the reporters, better reporters, put it together in kind of a story. But everybody believed this tape. There was no tape of it. So when I went out to do the book in 2009, 2010, I just felt that, somebody had captured this. And so I called up Chuck Daly's videographer, a guy named Pete Storich, who was the Detroit Pistons cameraman. And I went up to Pete's house, and we had a couple beers and looked through 9,000 DVDs before, there it is, because it was the game the night before, the French team. And I said, it's the practice the day after that. And sure it is, there it was the whole game. And
does it live up? Did it live up to expectations? Did it live up, given that there was this holy grail of a game? Did watching it, because you have a piece in SI where you give us the play-by-play, does the game live up to to what you were called or what you would imagine it would be?
The trash talking and the spirit and the, let's say, the kind of gestalt of the whole thing did. You know, to see these guys turn into, you know, these eighth grade middle school playground guys. And it's really funny. I mean, a foul is called on against Magic on Jordan. And the funniest line from the thing is Magic goes, "Yeah, here we are. They just moved Chicago Stadium right here to Monte Carlo. You can't touch Michael Jordan. They just moved the stadium right here, you know." And Jordan goes back and, "Hey, man, this is the 90s. You're done. This isn't the 80s. So that part of it lived up. Is it that incredible basketball? I mean, it is a scrimmage the night after they played an exhibition game, and they are in Monte Carlo. So we didn't see Jordan doing 360s or Magic doing incredible behind-the-back passes and everything. But the spirit of the whole thing and the way these guys remember it is what's interesting to me. Every one of these guys, when I ask them about it, particularly Magic and Michael, they all perked up when they talked about the greatest game that nobody ever saw. So it was kind of a triumph, sort of almost an archaeological triumph getting a hold of the thing.
The book, by the way, is The Dream Team, How Michael, Magic, Larry, Charles, and the Greatest Team of All Time Conquered the World and Changed the Game of Basketball Forever. And the teams that day were Leitner, Robinson, and Barkley. Leitner, Robinson, Barkley, Mullen, and Magic on the blue team. And Bird, Ewing, Malone, Pippen, and Jordan, little guard light, on the white team. And
Chuck had tried to divide it up by conference, but he couldn't quite do it. And so Malone was sort of, quote, on the East team. The funniest thing, though, Jeff, was that Bird, who had a bad back throughout this whole experience, he almost didn't play. He came back and retired, if people remember. The Barcelona was Larry's last thing. So his back was killing him, and Bird shows up that day. And he had thought he was going to, in Larry's term, I don't do a very good Larry, but I thought I was just going to ride the bike the whole damn day. But there were only 10 guys. So Bird looks 100 years old during the scrimmage. But in a key part of the game, he makes a steal. And I think he stole it from Magic. And he's dribbling down court at about 4 miles per hour. And Barkley gets back to defend him. And he gets near the basket, and he makes this kind of behind-the-back fake with the ball. I mean, it was beautiful. And he goes in for the layup, and Jordan hollers, "That's it, Larry. I knew you got some. I know you're old, but I know you got something left in you." You know? And it was sort of this perfect kind of climax that Bird really couldn't do anything, except he made this key play and a key part of the game, which Jordan remembered. You know, 18 years later, Jordan, you know, was really animated on remembering that Bird had made that steal.
Talking to Jack McCallum with SI again. It is host of the Dream Team Tapes podcast, available now. And so what did you think watching this 10-part series? I loved the you pointed out that Ken Burns only needed 90 minutes more than this to chronicle the Civil War, but Ken Burns didn't have Dennis Rodman. And
Have Rodman, didn't have Las Vegas.
What'd you think?
I made a joke the first time that the Roosevelts were 13 hours. However, there's three of them. And two of them were president, and Eleanor probably should have been president.
Right.
So I would have to say that I got into it a little bit more than I thought I would. And part of it has to do with the whole reason the thing was successful, and that is, you know, we're in this weird place right now. I don't know what you talk about on your radio show, but it's got to be a little bit harder, right?
It's certainly different. It's certainly different.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you'd be talking, I don't know whether Grizz would be in the, I guess they wouldn't be in the playoffs.
No, Grizz would be. Grizz would be eighth seed. Yeah, absolutely. Do not try to wrest that away from them. They would be in fact, they are going to come back and will be eighth seed, Jack, shortly.
All right. So you have, you know, you got that to talk about. So I, you know, true confession, me, like a lot of other people that were reviewing it, we got the thing early because there was no way you could digest 2 hours and try to write something on deadline. I posted my, I was hoping people were thinking I was that fast. You know, I posted them at like 11:01 on Sunday night. Well, I had gotten the episodes on Monday. So we're in the pandemic. You know, my wife and I are, what are we doing? We're taking walks. You know?
Right.
So I would start watching on Monday night, Tuesday morning, gone through it. Next thing I know, you know, I had kind of 4,000 words written, and Sports Illustrated, the website, didn't care because they don't have that. They're struggling for stuff to write about.
Right.
So it was just a kind of, I fell a little bit more for it than I thought I would. I think as the time went on, there were some criticisms of it, which I understand. But the guy did 10 hours of something, and I thought he covered the main characters. There was a Pippen episode. There was a Rodman episode. There was a Phil Jackson. There was a Steve Kerr. Did it come out as a Jordan-esque thing? Of course it did. We knew that going in, didn't we?
Yes, we knew that. We knew that going in, and I do think that one of the things that came through was the array of characters here: Dennis Rodman and everything that he was, Phil Jackson and the story that he was from this fundamentalist household. He becomes like the hippie and doing whatever, and Pippen and his remarkable story coming from nowhere. Steve Kerr and his dad getting killed and all of that. Like the Jerry Krause, who obviously emerged as the villain. But even apart from Jordan, the people around him, it's just remarkable. And they each, I do think, merited their own story. Did you think anyone was dealt with unfairly? Pippen was excoriated by Jordan early on in the series for being selfish, etc. Jerry Krause obviously took a pummeling. Did you think anyone was treated unfairly by the video, by the series?
I guess by the time, you know, early on, I was very surprised at some of the reaction to Jerry Krause. And a lot of the criticism of it came upon the fact that, you know, Jerry's dead. And he could not really answer for himself. And when I got to the end of 10 hours, I knew a lot of things that Krause had done, particularly this Kukoc insistence. I understood that anger that Pippen and Jordan felt. You know, I would remember going to Chicago, and they had won a championship by then. They were on their way to a second one, and Jerry would only talk about this guy, Tony Kukoc.
Right.
And, you know, I understood that. However, by the time we got to the end, I did think, yeah, They didn't probably shovel on Krause a little bit too much. I would say that would be a valid criticism. And one of the real criticisms I had of it was, if you recall, if you saw the last two episodes, did you see the whole thing?
Uh-huh.
I mean, Michael's two sons brightened up that screen. They
were great.
They were on there for a minute, and you know that Michael wanted to keep his family out of it. However, we had a long deconstruction of his relationship with his father, which we should. But then we had another one with him and his security guard.
Gus, yeah.
You know, Gus. And I got that, too. But if you're going to show how important a father figure is to you, you know, then let's see some of you being a father. And I really thought those kids really would have added a lot. I mean, you know, I'm torn here because I get the idea I don't want to put my kids in front of a camera. But, you know, I think he could have done more in that respect, that would have really added to it, that we would have seen more of, is Michael a father to these kids? Or is it what Jasmine said? I had to Google him.
It was a revealing moment, their brief appearance, too, because
what they said was that
during Utah games, they would not be in the crowd. They would be watching from the basement or wherever. And as you pointed out, it was not explicitly identified, but there is a racial subtext to that. Is there not in that Utah crowd?
Well, I thought there was. I mean, I'm always a white guy attending these things and trying to figure out, but I mean, I felt it when I went to Utah, and then they did that great showing of the blonde-haired woman in Indiana, who I mean, she looked like she was going to go into cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
You know, just hollering at, you know, she turned into, by the way, one of the interesting things about this documentary is how many subplots it has given so many people. Like, I just happened to come upon it on Twitter or Google or someplace. You know, this woman now has been on like five radio shows, you know, that everybody could, you know, Horace Grant has become, oh, what Michael said is BS. Scotty's getting interviewed. All the people that weren't interviewed, you know, his teammates, like Craig Hodges, was pissed off about it. So it not only filled up, you know, 10 hours during the pandemic, it filled up about 40 hours with follow-up. I mean, I'm kind of done with it,
but it's
filled up like 40 hours of follow-up stories, which is kind of interesting, actually, and everybody wants their say about it.
You I've know? Kept you too long, but so I'm going to jam two questions into one, like they do at a press conference at whatever, when they finally hand you the microphone. You want to get two questions. One is, you were obviously with SI when he had a falling out with SI, so over the Hanging Up Michael cover. I wondered what that was like. And then you also asked a question in your last blog post on this stuff, which is a question I had asked, we talked about on the other day on this radio show, which is, do you perceive that Michael today is happy? Could you take those two? And then we will graciously thank you for your time.
Well, I tried to get the second question. I thought that was sort of the essence of the last two episodes. And without talking to Michael, which he, you know, he's friendly with me, which goes back to the first question, and we'll circle back to that. But, you know, I tried to get kind of more on that. A couple people didn't call me back, maybe didn't want to talk about it. Phil Jackson was kind of the key to the whole thing when he said to me, and it's you have to kind of, well, you know, you're in this business. You got to kind of be fair with people when you're quoting them, but you got to sometimes read between the lines. And Phil said, Michael is not unhappy, but he really wants that franchise to be something. I mean, you think about this guy, we saw his competitiveness, and he cannot be completely happy. I think he's come to understand, as people do, you know, Jerry West might have eventually in your neck of the woods, how hard it is to try to take anything but this circle of rotating planet franchises, Boston, L.A., now Golden State, you know, Silicon Valley funded team, how difficult it is to get those people, you know, to the top. But Michael, he's probably come to understand that, but it's got to be tearing him up inside. I just can't think that his world is completely happy until he gets something, you know, with Charlotte. That's just my opinion. Right. And I didn't go as deep on it as I could, you know. So far as the second one, or the first question, I got kind of lucky because I had decided when Bird came back and retired, and then Michael retired the first time, and Magic retired because of HIV, that I left the NBA for a couple years. Like, nobody noticed that, by the way, you know, with all the retirements, Jack McCallum left for a couple years. It was not a major story. Like, I did some editing, you know, at the magazine, and covered college basketball a couple years, and had Calipari holler at me one time, but that's another story. So I didn't write the minor league story about Jordan. It said, bag it, Michael. Michael Jordan, Jordan and the Bulls are embarrassing baseball. And when I saw that subhead, I said, oh boy, this is not going to be good. And so part of it was Jordan had already kind of turned into a semi-Howard Hughes figure. Yeah. By 93 and the first retirement and the first three-peat and the death of his father, and the gambling accusations had come to light, revelations had come to light, he had already turned toward from being like the friendly, I want to be on the cover guy, not just to SI, but to everybody. It was getting harder. So the SI thing comes along, I think he authentically was pissed off and said, as he did the doc, he felt betrayed. However, it was also continuing a trend of not talking to people very much. You know,
right.
It fit into this easy narrative of I don't want to talk. And when I came back on the, when he came back with the Wizards, I was back on the beat. And I saw him a number of times. And we would talk. And then I would say something like, so you think you're more of a small forward now? Or, and Michael would go, is this for SI? and he would shut it down. And so when I went to do the book, and whenever I talked to him, maybe 2010, you know, I got with his representative. I don't, you know, you got to go through some hoops for Michael. And I said to Este Portnoy, you know, tell Michael it's got nothing to do with SI. And by then I wasn't full time there anyway. I was kind of semi retired, although I'm not doing a very good job of being that. But and Michael said, okay, it's not for SI, so no problem. And so I talked to him, and he, like every other person I talked to for the book, they couldn't have been better. They all remember this as a bright moment in their life, a seminal time, something that was very important. And that's another luck that I got on doing the book. It was kind of the right time to talk to all of them.
Jack, you've been wonderful to give us so much time. Thank you very much. Love your stuff. And again, it is the Dream Team Tapes podcast. It is available now, wildly successful already. Thank you, Jack, and have a relaxed and happy Memorial Day.
All right.
Thanks.
Same to you, Jeff. Thank you.
That is Jack McCallum from Sports Illustrated. It is amazing how we can talk about that team and that era forever, isn't it?
There's a mythical quality, though, that I don't know if it can exist. Now when you look
look at the scores, too. Like,
yeah.
These games were 80-76.
I mean, there were plenty of playoff games that were in the 70s.
A slog.
Yeah.
All right, we have blown right through our commercials. Do we just go what's next?
Yeah, Mr. McCallum deserved that.
Mr. McCallum deserved that. So what's coming up next here on the show?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. They'll be joined by ESPN's Bill Bardwell to discuss the NFL. Jeff joins him at 1:25. Jason Smith joins us on Giannotto and Jeffrey at 3:25. Dan Wilkin joins GP at 4:25, as does Jeff at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. Our long extended weekend for us. We'll be back shortly on Tuesday. But for now, our work here is done.
Memphis is listening now more than ever to 92.9 on smart speakers by saying play 92.9 ESPN.
Thanks to you, the 92.9 listeners in Entercom Radio Memphis, over $6,600 total now, 20,000 meals for Mid-South families.
For the greatest listeners in the sports world, you, thank you. The Mid-South station you can count on is 92.9 FM ESPN. 92.9 is helping Memphis stay connected. For more, go to radio.com/stayconnected.
I'm consumer investigator Andy Wise. I bet you're really counting on your computer right about now. Maybe you have to work from home. Maybe you're homeschooling the kids. Now more than ever, your laptops, desktops, and devices are essentials. And I have vetted the most trustworthy computer shop in the business, Cooper Systems. As our city begins to reopen, you can trust Cooper Systems to provide a safe, clean environment, maintaining the highest health standards while providing the lowest prices on the best name brands. Owner Lee Cooper has nearly 40 years in computers, more than anyone else in the market. They sell new and refurbished desktops and laptops of every brand, including Apple. His certified technicians even saved my laptop after some malware hacked it. They found it, squashed it, and saved the very computer I use to run Andy Wise Choice. As an essential emergency service, Cooper Systems is open as your Wise choice for your computer needs. 2744 Mount Moriah Parkway, 901-360-9679, or at coopersystems.com.
New Amsterdam Vodka is a premium 80-proof vodka made from the finest quality grains. It is 5 times distilled for unparalleled smoothness, filtered 3 times to create a soft finish, as you surely know by now. It's so smooth you can drink it straight. And yes, it is what I, Gary Parrish, buy when I'm inside the liquor store. And that's because it's a quality vodka that's reasonably priced. Do you know how silly it is to pay nearly twice as much for another bottle of vodka when New Amsterdam is awesome and available? It's super silly. So don't do that. Instead, just grab a bottle or a case of New Amsterdam Vodka, which is the fastest growing brand of vodka in the United States of America. And if you're into flavored vodkas, New Amsterdam offers a variety. And very shortly, they're going to have a watermelon flavored vodka. That'll be the newest newest flavor. When it hits the shelves, it'll be here before you know it. Also, New Amsterdam got a gluten-free vodka, so if you're on a gluten-free diet, grab that. A bottle of New Amsterdam gluten-free vodka. Ask for it by name when you're in a bar, restaurant, or liquor store. New Amsterdam vodka. That's New Amsterdam vodka. Pour your soul out on the web. NewAmsterdamSpirits.com.
If you're injured, you need to hear this message. All law firms are not the same, and the law firm you choose can make a huge difference. So how do you choose which firm to represent you? I'm Mike Morgan of Morgan & Morgan. Here's my advice. Do your research. Find the firm with the most experience, the best results, with the resources and track record of delivering exceptional service. As America's largest injury law firm, we have thousands of employees, unrivaled technology, investigators, experts, and an army of over 500 lawyers across the country. We are everywhere for everyone. We have the resources to take on the biggest fights and the biggest bullies. Last year alone, over 2 million people like you called Morgan & Morgan in their time of need. And our firm recovered over $7 billion for our clients. So after an injury, who would you choose? Results matter. Reputation matters. Choices matter. There's only one. Morgan & Morgan. ForThePeople.com.
Dial pound law on your cell. Pound law, that's all.
Free background information available upon request.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, listen carefully. Due to the sudden downturn of the U.S. economy, there's never been a better time to check your eligibility for the Fresh Start programs offered by the IRS to reduce or even eliminate your IRS tax problems. Call our special hotline number and find out in minutes if you qualify for these life-changing debt reduction programs green-lighted by the IRS for the summer of 2020. Business or personal, if you're in a payment plan with no end in sight, have unfiled...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.